Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about...
This is another podcast while driving, and I was just caught up in the production of a YouTube. Lots of time, and I will be struggling to get to my rehabilitation appointment on time at this famous Glenbrook intersection. And the lights have been sitting this way for a while, so I might have a capacity to get across. This particular podcast will deal with a whole range of effort to produce a synthetic program, that is, a synthetic lesson from podcasts. Realization that the mistakes around the place, the obstacles around the place are... sufficient for me to reevaluate and go through a different path forward. Now, so as one of the things I did was I was looking for feedstock of multiple choice questions to put into podcast, and then the podcast would break it up and put it away. And I had a difficulty. I thought I'll do an HSC physics exam, very worthwhile. And then there were several problems. One is that the diagrams were difficult to convert into podcasts, so that's a difficult thing. And so you had to say there was a picture with a boy and a girl on one of it, rather than actually saying left or right. You can actually burn the image into people's ideas of what you're doing. You have to step back and describe things in a lot of detail, and that's a lot of effort for people to look up. So the diagrams have an advantage. They're there for an advantage in this media. So this is a point towards, you know, just get it onto a page where people can see what's going on. So this is a scratch about how to go across. Then coming across, I'm just trying to think. I've just done the first over an hour of work. I've just done the first three multiple choice questions. Now these are supposed to be a 20-minute lesson, and it's taking me an hour to work through the first three questions. And one is that there's a lot of detail to be unpacked in every question. And so we'll just go through it. And so this is sort of things that, how do I describe it? As you go along, you know that people have been taught a lot of incorrect things. So if you give an explanation, you have to be very, very careful and guide them through. So what I'm going to do in this drive, as I go, last under 20 minutes, so thank goodness for that, is I'll just go through some of the misconceptions coming across. Now, there is a goodly number of books and texts, and dare I say, not HSC physics exams, but science exams, which describe a battery, a DC battery, as a pile of lines, a broad line, small line, broad line, small line, and the most intuitive way of putting it is putting the smallest set of stack of lines. So if you can imagine a battery is represented diagrammatically, just checking it's all okay, a battery is represented diagrammatically as a series of strokes, horizontal strokes, a long stroke, short stroke, long stroke, short stroke, and there's an even number. So if there are three long strokes, so three short strokes. Now, I'm going to refer to it. The most natural way of feeling this is to actually put the short stroke on the back. It's a very natural thing to do for two reasons. One, it tends to represent the battery, as you said, because you put the battery down, put it down with a little short knob at the top. This is a positive terminal at the top as a way of visualizing. If you put a positive terminal at the bottom, it will flip over. So the way you draw it is that short little thing at the top. So also when you draw the lines, there's this natural tendency to put the short little thing at the top. But the short little thing, even though it's fatter, refers to the fact where there is less charge, or the positive charges arise from the short end, the short little bar, and the longer bars arise, that's where the positive charges come from. And convention has it that we have positive charges, or the higher potential energy up, and the lower potential energy down. And in actual fact, there is this technical thing that a battery doesn't... Technically, we don't have the word voltage, even though we have it here, high voltage. Voltage actually is not actually a dinky-dye physics or science term. We call potential difference. Potential difference is the number of joules of energy per coulomb between two points. For a period of charge, this charge is at a position, this is the charge of electrons, is at a position in a circuit that it can do work, and it either has a positive charge, a positive potential difference between two points, or a negative potential difference between two points. A negative potential distance means that you have to put in energy to lift that charge from one point to another. And this is always positive charges. So, the way things are drawn in circuits is intuitively poor to the student's eye. The actual long bar is always at the top, and the small bar is always at the bottom. And that's a DC circuit. And we're going to, in this question, we had a little chat. The first question was, and you can go and see the YouTube, finally gets going. I should have said this one time. This, there goes the other problem, in that I now know enough to produce YouTube relatively quickly, and this is using the PowerPoint record button. So just do your PowerPoint as you go, and as you do each slide, you record. It's pretty dodgy, but at least it gets it. Oh crap. Sorry, I'm just. That's 80 to the count somehow. 20 minutes to get across here. I'm at Northern Road, I've got to go Mulgoa Road. 5 minutes late for this. Who do not worry. Okay, so the question was the answer was that Edison is the chappie, the US chap who supported DC current, that is the distribution from the power station to the home was by DC current. And when you look at it, when you're teaching a revision teaching, the opportunity to just give the correct answer, yes, they've studied it, yes, they want to know, yes, and go along. What I'm really focusing on is the students who have just seen it for the first time and are ripe for feeding a lot more constructive information in. So you've just got the very first piece of information. Now you can say, well, look, Edison was concerned that AC, as the voltage increases, that put a changing voltage to the person and actually electrocuted people. And so I show there the picture of the elephant that Edison electrocuted, and a general picture of him. It's a rather shonky person, because I want to actually contrast Edison as the uneducated person who just grabbed growth with anything he could muster, and contrast him with the last choice of Westinghouse, who was also a scientist but had lived through one boom and took the know-how of the railway boom and put it into the know-how of the electricity boom. He knew exactly how to do it. He had learned from one environment into the next, and he learned about invention and intellectual property from looking at railway inventions. And it's interesting that the Westinghouse story is not just a fat, dumb American. Oops, let's go. A fat, dumb American, you know, yet an evil American. He was, in actual fact, someone who learned from his environment. Dare I say, a case in point here is I've been through research environments, and I sort of know a different way of approaching education, which is this hammer experiment. Let's go across here. Maybe I'm doing okay. So you've got to look at the different ways of going ahead. Now, we've got the battery, the orientation of the battery is one thing which is missed out. We have the circuit symbol for a resistor. Now, the Americans have the resistor as a little zigzag going down, whereas the Australians and Europeans have it as a little box with the letter R next to it. You don't write ohms, you write R12, that's 12 ohms, or R13.5 ohms. And that little box there, and the reason that you have it there, I think the Europeans decided the box is that when you actually shrink things down, the very first diagram you lose any resolution of is one of those zigzags. So you can't tell whether it's a black bluff or anything like that. The Europeans and Australians have gone away from drawing resistors with this zigzag. However, in physics textbooks, they still teach people the circuit as a zigzag. What can I say? But you need to do that because to show a few zigzags, a battery in a few zigzags is the DC distribution. Going across here. Now, that reminded me of some of the basic things about transistors. Now, the interesting thing is that I was taught electronics Alright. I would be a sad, sorry cucumber. 15 minutes, I might do it okay. I was taught transistors horribly. And it's only later when I actually began using them that I thought, oh, I now know what it is more there. So the actual diagrams of transistors, the transistors are put in a circuit if the current goes through the transistor. It's got a little arrow showing the current arrow through a transistor, and that's how you put it in the circuit. So a transistor with the apparent arrow going against the direction of the current will be just a diode. It will just be a useless. So it's the opposite direction, which really matters. Now, this is interesting that a diode is the NP, or PN, depending on where you want to do it. Oh, come on. Don't do it to me. Oh well, it's okay. So I've just got some traffic going on here. Yeah, so you think it's PNP. So it's P, collector, base, emitter. Well, depending on how you do it. You would think that because it's PNP, it really wouldn't matter. And this is one of the things that absolutely grabs me, fascinates me. You've got a device which looks to me, so it's got an inversion symmetry or a reflection symmetry. Come on, what the heck are you doing? Okay, maybe. Okay, I hope that's pulled a peak by the thing. Is just waiting to turn. Okay, I've got through that traffic thing. Transistors look so they have a reflection symmetry. Okay, yet they don't. Obviously, they have a way that they can be wired up. Obviously, a diode has an NP, that's or PN, but a NPN transistor wired back to front would be also an NPN resistor. So I don't quite fully understand what's going on here. That's my limited knowledge. So we've got one thing. So you can work out how to put in a resistor, sorry, a transistor, into a circuit. You always have the arrow pointed downwards because you've got just power supply on your left, and then the current comes out of the top of the power supply and then down through your circuit. It's very unusual to ever have a current going upwards. The currents always come down, and then the bottom of the page to go right. More in general, that's the way you can have it such that it continues on to the next circuit, plugs in. So that's one way of transistors. The other thing to know about transistors is that if you set the current into a transistor, okay, you have a current supply, a current limited supply, that no matter what the voltage is, it supplies a certain current. It therefore does exactly that. A transistor does exactly that. A transistor is a current setting device. That is, it will allow 80 milliamps or 100 milliamps or 70 milliamps regardless through it, no matter what voltage you throw at it. You put a small voltage at it or a high voltage at it, it'll just sit there doing what it's told. It will, it's like this beautiful computer, this little blob of material, you know, it's dipped, doped silicon or whatever it is, gallium arsenide, or it's a gallium germanium one, whatever it is, what's the original one? I think, iron sulfide were the original ones, weren't they? But it's amazing. Iron sulfide is a semiconductor. But they're there, and they're really smart little things, because that you can give it a current, and it will give you back a current. So you may put in, say, a microamp. And then, it's because it's multiplication effect, the way it's structured, it will give you, only allow a milliamp through. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't, if you put 2 volts, 30 volts, 15 volts, it will, depending on what the current you set through, give it there. Now, there's a large linear region here that if you give it, say typically it's 2 microamps, so 0 to 2 is a bit dodgy, but from 2 up to say 20 microamps, it will literally increase the amount of current through it. That's that simple. One of the things that I don't know quite how, I sort of understood bits and pieces. I understood the actual characteristic diagrams. So your characteristic for a resistor, because it is something which is the way it is, you've got voltage on the x-axis and current on the y-axis for your transistor, and those transistors will produce a flat characteristic for a bias current. So you give it a bias current, it will go up from zero volts to zero current, but after a certain while it will turn over and give you a very, very nice linear sort of flat, well, not quite flat, there's a slope into it, but it's sort of not like, it's not much compared, and you can actually make it a very flat one. This course is right for use. It's just such a fantastic fantastic thing, and it's a little bit more, I think, a little bit better behaved myself than a what does it say? Okay, truck training takes a lot. 8 minutes to get there. Can I do it? Oh, come on. I don't know. One of these things is that you can be impatient here and always pick the wrong lane. I think I'm on the right lane. So it's a through lane. So It's not as bad as some parts of Sydney where there's actually three grades of roads. They've built one road, then the next one, built the next one. There's actually two grades of road. There's the Great Western Highway, which used to snake out laboriously from suburb to suburb, and then they built a through road called the motorway. So the motorway gets into the city in sort of no time. Half an hour driving to the city. It takes a time to get there. Yeah, so it's your transistors are the way to go. Now, we've got, again, for this particular lesson, I talked about Faraday. So this is about half an hour of YouTube for one multiple choice questions, and it's sort of like, oh, I don't know, it's going around, you want to you know, how much do you want to teach someone? It's and why do you want to teach them? My overall question is, yeah, I can actually push someone through quickly, as I speed them through, I know that I am cutting off. I'm not giving them the full information or direction, or I'm reinforcing a bit of a sloppiness that someone has had before. I'm just going to check here. Okay. This truck train is just trucking along. I'm coming, overtaking on the inside. Hear that around the side? Okay. Well, I think I might cruise in here. I'm 6 minutes away from my destination, and it is a complex space. It's getting in. There is such an opportunity to actually explore and explain in depth. Now, look, the problem is people may be bored with this and won't pick it up, but it's more just attempting over and over again to work out how to explain things. And look, like most experimental things, they'll all fail. It's just being able to read, use failure, efficiently use failure. So, essentially, that's what you want your research. That's what you're paying your researcher there. You're paying your researcher there is to. You can pay anyone you like to fail, but it's. I think a researcher looks at something and decides that they're going to mix and dice their failure, right? And I suppose what's happening here is that I'm looking at. Just trying to do things differently and trying to get the information out across. And there's this. Oh, and another thing is the another thing which people get quite angry about is that the full chemical reaction in a dry cell battery, which is really it's not really dry cell. It's not wet. It's a moist. Gel, paste, in fact. It's not what we would call dry. If you cut open a battery, the paste inside the battery feels wet. So dry, so it's not as wet as water. You don't cut it open and, oh, it's not liquid. It's sort of like it's a non-liquid cell battery, so a paste. And in that paste is, trying to think, it's something ammonium something or other, and the thing about that is that your a battery loses very little weight. It let's put it on. It loses a hydrogen atom for at the top carrying an electron. Oh, so it's two electrons per hydrogen gas molecule. So your dry cell battery will be spitting out hydrogens. Now, the electrons don't go back and sit somewhere else in the battery. The electrons sitting. Oh, I'll tell you where the electrons come. The electrons come from the case of the battery. The electrons come from the metallic electron-rich zinc casing of the battery, and that the electrons are ripped out of that, and they go, oh, I'm leaving. They go round the circuit and come up the top, and then they get sucked into, or brought into, I can't think I'm going to make this on time. That will be a world record. How did the heck did I do that one? This is one example. So the thing, look, it's so rich. You could explain it to people. You could say, look, electrons don't come out of the light bulb. They actually come out of the battery. That is, the electrons take a journey from the bottom, go in and link onto a hydrogen and float out. Now, that's what happens. It's not as though someone's other explanation that I learnt for a long year is easier to understand. That's not right. It's actually easier to understand that the electrons are flowing out of the, going out of the base and then getting onto gas molecules and floating away. And as this is happening, the electrons that are in this, beautiful, the electrons which are in the surface of the zinc goes in, and essentially what happens is that your battery doesn't necessarily get very much lighter, but it gets there's much more mass travelling in from the out of the thing to the centre. So it's like you're riding a bike and moves across it. So one of the ways to really check the charge on your battery is it's that this dropping thing, which obviously makes sense, but the mass actually travels in towards the core. And I think I'm going to bloody well make this on time. I just hope I've got everything spot on. Yeah, beaut. Okay. Well, that's the end of this podcast. I'll give you a few more how it actually happens stuff. And I'm not actually an expert explainer. I've just sat through and not understood. I think my ability of explaining is the fact that I haven't understood things. Okay, right, thanks a lot.
Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.